Well, I tapped on just a little bit of this, what I was going to touch on today. Yesterday at the end of the 10 visit checklist class that we had. And I was going to teach on a class on staff meetings today. That was actually on the schedule for this month. But I decided to switch off and do a class since we're at the first of the year. And I was just talking with this doctor up here that I take for granted, or I just assume, which is not a good thing to do in life, but like that success in your daily routine. How many here listened to that tape? Now, remember I told you we'd do a little thing? Now, how many in here has their life been affected in a positive manner since starting your daily routine? Okay, so you want to start that. Well, it's just like when I first recorded that tape, I didn't know what in the world, why was someone requesting me to put that on tape? Because to me, that's just second nature. That's just kind of the way I live my life. And I just kind of assume everybody did that. But I take it no one does. Not everybody does. So the reason I chose to do this class today is that we are at the beginning of a new year, thereabouts. And I don't want to take the assumption that everyone does what everyone should do at the beginning of a new year. Now you've heard, you got the New Year's resolutions, but that isn't it, okay? So we're going to have a class today on what is goals. We're going to talk about goals today. Now, the title of this talk is a question. The title of the talk is a question, and it says, "A Fool Who Me?" And when the time we're done with this class, I want you to ask yourself, are you basically displaying actions of a fool on a day-to-day basis? Now, a definition of a fool is or should be, how's that? A fool refuses to learn or knows what to do, but refuses to do anything different. Let's write that out again. Let's make sure we got it. A fool refuses to learn or knows what to do or thinks they know what to do, but refuses to do anything different. Now some of this, a little bit of this is going to be familiar to you from your basic boot camp. But that basic boot camp is, again, so crammed full with information, you lose some of it. You have to realize that, and get your pens on this one, the mind is soil. It's just like good, rich dirt. And that's what the mind is. And what grows out of your mind comes from the seeds or thoughts that you plant in your mind. And you can say, well, what if I don't plant anything in there? What if I'm idealistic? What if I'm lackadaisical? I don't do anything. Well, then weeds will grow in place of it. Have you ever noticed that? That always amazes me about a garden. If I don't plant a particular type of seed, I can't expect a particular type of vegetable or fruit to grow out of that garden, correct? But to get those tomatoes every summer, I have to start out by cultivating the dirt, the soil, preparing it. Then I've got to plant the right ton of seeds. Then I got to nurture those sprouts as they come up. I got to water them. I got to take care of them. Right? And then, and only then, after much time has gone into, anybody that's ever done gardening knows, after a lot of time and effort, then like Dr. Wall, you know, his famous garden. And he goes, then after a lot of effort by his gardener, does he reap these rewards, correct? But have you ever noticed that if you don't cultivate and you don't plant anything, what happens? What happens to that garden spot in your yard? Weeds. Now, where did those things come from? And they don't need any help cultivating, do they? And they spread like wildfire, don't they? It's the same thing with your mind. It really is. We were talking to a doctor yesterday I was talking to someone Friday night, and he was talking about something he wanted to do, but he really couldn't see how to do that. And why is it? Because he's not cultivating his mind on a daily basis to ever obtain that. So, how do you cultivate your mind? How do you cultivate your thoughts? How do you keep control of it? Well, you have to learn exactly what we first started this class off. I asked how many people in here have heard the success in your daily routine, and how many have felt the effects of it. And the hands went up. What happens to do the success in your daily routine? What are you doing? You're preparing your mind, right? And then you're feeding your mind. By the time you get to the office, what do you do? What are you supposed to do? You're supposed to be walking through the office and doing what? Put expectation on the office, correct? You're feeding the mind on the way to the office with good stuff, good positive flow. And then you're getting there and you're putting expectations on your day and so on. Is that preparation or not? Now, who literally has seen a difference in numbers that consistently uses your daily routine? How many here have seen numbers in your practice? That's like picking those tomatoes off the tomato plant. Those numbers wouldn't be there had you not cultivated the ground that produces that. So it really, Dr. Greller, it doesn't come down to how many ads we can run for you, does it? It doesn't come down to how many new patients we can buy. It comes down to man, land, and plan. And I've always said woman works in there too. You get the right person with the right land, with the right plan. Well, the plan's always set, but it takes a person to be working it. And if that person is not prepared for the job task, it's not going to happen. Right? And what are weeds in your practice? Distractions. Exactly. Weeds are all those distractions that get you to one day you're going, now I know I set out a goal at the beginning of the year. That's what we're talking about. I know I set that. And then you get up somewhere in July and somewhere back in, you know, late January, early February, you got off just a little bit. And then I got off that little bit of routine. And then that wasn't quite as important. All of a sudden, now we're going out these directions. And then one time you got out in July and you said, now I know I had better intentions in this year than to be where I am in July. That's what those distractions are. They get you off course. And where the mind, write this down. If you've heard this in other classes, but it's true. Where the mind goes, the rest will follow. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you are from the Northeast. I don't care if you're from the West, big town, small town. I don't care what your background is. I don't care about your family life. Where your mind goes, everything will follow. So, in the morning routine or in the success in your routine, it tells you that we ought to set out goals, correct? We should review them 3 times a day, morning, quiet time, and night time. Now, I've told it before, and I don't remember, somebody this weekend walked up to me and told me, Tom, who was that? It came up to me and said, I got my pillow speakers. Is that anybody in here? They said, I got my pillow speakers and my goals are planted right up on my ceiling above my bed. And he said, I just wanted to thank you for that idea. And I'm like, okay, But it's true. You got to review your goals when we learn what a goal is here in a few minutes. You got to review them 3 times a day. Well, most powerful time of your day when your subconscious is most alert is when you're waking up and when you're going to bed. So if that was an idea I always have. The goals should be above the bed, and I should review them before the light goes out. And when the light comes on in the morning, the first thing I do is read my goals. Now, two of them are already gone. Now, sometime in my busy day, I've got to find about 5 minutes just to sit down in the midday and review those goals again. That's an easy way to do that. Okay. Now, let's get on around to goals. This is not a class on success in your routine. Now, only a fool, remember, a fool who me, only a fool would fly a plane, go out and jump in a plane, and try to fly that thing without ever taking a lesson. Wouldn't you call that foolish? Or, even if you knew how to fly a plane, only a fool, and I happen to have a pilot's license, this is foolish. Take off in a plane without a map or flight plan. Telling you, man, when you get up there, all railroads look the same, all water towers look the same, all different subdivisions look the same, and a high interstate looks the same. So you get up there without your instruments working and without a map or a flight plan filed. If anybody knows what that means in flying, a flight plan means something happens to you, at least they're going to come find the remainders of you. Okay. Now, I haven't been a pilot in years, but I do a lot of boating, and only a fool would sail his vessel into strange or unmarked territory. That is dumb. Dumb. I'll tell you a quick one on Dr. Owen. He was moving his famous boat he's always talking about, and he moved it from Hilton Head, and he was just going down to Jacksonville, and he was outside, which you know, he's out in the ocean coming down the coastline, and he was going to go in, I think, at Brunswick, and he wasn't reading his map, and he was doing visual. He goes, well, there's the channel, there's the port. We'll go in there, and all of a sudden, he starts hitting ground, his engine stalling out and all this, and all of a sudden, he realized he's 3/4 mile outside the main channel, and that ocean looked great, nice, great big, but there are sandbars, and there are things like that out there. So, only a fool would sail his vessel into strange or unmarked territories without a map. Now, go through life without a destination. You know, I've heard life's a journey, not a destination. I think that fits for the average person. Life's a journey, not a destination. You know, that make sure you're enjoying it while you're going. But I don't think that fits for the above average person. Above average person is somebody that wants to accomplish more and has more potential to accomplish more than they know. I would hope that that's you sitting in this classroom. You're not wanting to punch a clock. You're not happy to work a 40-hour week. You're not happy to have 2-week vacation once a year. You ever seen one of those people that, I'll talk about this when I get down to breaking down personality types in a few minutes, but have you ever seen a person, what I call a 60%er family? 60% is the average people out there. You ever seen them on vacation? Do they have fun? No, because they've been 50 weeks that year, they haven't been having fun. They haven't had practice on having fun, and they've been planning for 50 weeks for 2 weeks off. So I would think that the people that we've got in this room are wanting more out of life than just to make it through. Okay, life is not just a journey. It is a destination. But unless by pure blind luck, you won't reach these destinations that you guys have set in your head without a map And that is what a goal is. A goal is a map to your future. See, some people, I'm going to get into in a few minutes. What is a goal? A lot of people don't even realize what a goal is. They think they know. Well, I've got a goal in my life. I've set things as, you know, this is what I'd like to accomplish. But that's not necessarily a goal. Let me read a story. This will take a few minutes to read. But this comes out of a book by John Maxwell called The Laws of Leadership. I recommend that book if anybody would like to take it on. But there's a story that talks about basically goals or maps to your future. A Norwegian explorer, Mr. Amundsen, led one of the groups. Ironically, Amundsen had not originally intended to go to the Antarctica. His desire was to be the first man to reach the North Pole. But when he discovered that Robert Peary had beaten him there, Amundsen changed his goal and headed towards the other end of the earth. North or south, he knew his planning would pay off. Amundsen carefully charted his course. Before his team ever set off, Amundsen had painstakingly planned his trip. He studied the methods of the Eskimos and others experienced Arctic travelers and determined that their best course of action would be to transport all their equipment and supplies by dog sled. When he assembled his team, he chose expert skiers and dog handlers. His strategy was simple. The dogs would do most of the work as the group traveled 15 to 20 miles in a six-hour period each day. That would allow both the dogs and the men plenty of time to rest each day for the following day's travel. Amundsen's forethought and attention to detail were incredible. He located and stocked supply depots along the route. That way they would not have to carry every bit of their supplies with them the whole trip. He also equipped his people with the best gear possible. Amundsen had carefully considered every possible aspect of the journey, thought it through, and planned accordingly, and it paid off. The worst problem they experienced on their trip was an infected tooth that one man had had to have extracted. Scott, however, violated the law of navigation. The other team of men was led by Robert Falcon Scott, a British naval officer who had previously done some exploring in the Antarctic area. Scott's expedition was the antithesis of Amundsen. Instead of using dog sleds, Scott decided to use motorized sledges and ponies. Their problems began when the motors on the sledges stopped working only 5 days into the trip. The ponies didn't fare well either in those frigid temperatures. When they reached the foot of the Transantarctic Mountains, all the poor animals had to be killed. As a result, the team members themselves ended up hauling the 200-pound sledges. It was hard work. Scott had not given enough attention to the team's other equipment. Their clothes were so poorly designed that all the men developed frostbite. One team member required an hour every morning just to get his boots on over his swollen feet. And everyone became snowblind because of the inadequate goggles Scott had supplied. On top of everything else, the team was always low on food and water. That was due to Scott's poor planning. The depots of the supplies Scott established were inadequately stocked, too far apart, and often poorly marked, which made them very difficult to find. Because they were continually low on fuel to melt snow, everyone became dehydrated. Making things even worse was Scott's last-minute decision to take along a fifth man, even though they had prepared enough supplies for only four. After covering a grueling 800 miles in 10 weeks, Scott's exhausted group finally arrived at the South Pole on January 17, 1912. There they found the Norwegian flag flapping in the wind and a letter from Amundsen. The other well-led team had beaten them there to their goal by more than a month. If you don't live by the law of navigation, as bad as their trip to the pole was, that isn't the worst part of the story. The trek back was horrific. Scott and his men were starving and suffering from scurvy. But Scott, unable to navigate to the very end, was oblivious to their plight. With time running out and desperately low on food, Scott insisted that they collect 30 pounds of geological specimens to take back more weight to be carried by the worn-out men. Their progress became slower and slower. One member of the party sank into a stupor and died. Another, Lawrence Oates, was in terrible shape. The former army officer who had originally been brought along to take care of the ponies was frostbite so severe that he had trouble going on. Because he believed he was endangering the team's survival, it's said that he purposely walked out into a blizzard to relieve the group of himself as a liability. Before he left the tent and headed out in the storm, he said, "I'm just going to be outside. I may be some time." Scott and his final two team members made it only a little bit farther north before giving up. The return trip had already taken 2 months, and still they were 150 miles from their base camp. There they died. So they'll quote something out of Napoleon Hill. And you've heard me say it before. First, before we ever can make a goal. See, goals are... The guy had a goal. He wanted to be the first guy to the South Pole, correct? But if you're ever going to accomplish a goal, then you must have steps that you're going to take to accomplish along the way. And it's going to take planning. So that's what a goal is. A goal is a map to a destination. The goal is what we're reaching for. But if you don't have a map set accordingly, planned out, then look how far off track you can get without right, proper planning. So you can set this goal of, I want to increase $10,000 a month. And you in your head can say, all I got to do is buy enough new patients. Surely that's got to happen. But no, we have to take planning throughout to ever get to those collection figures. So first, before we make our goals out, we need to understand and write this down. I want everyone to write this down, possibly take it home, play around on the computer, get it framed, because the power of potential is tied within it. Now, you guys have heard me talk on this before, but what the mind of man can conceive and believe, you can, write that out in large letters, you can achieve. What the mind of man can conceive and believe, you can achieve. Now, conceive is be able to, how far can you think? How far is far? We walked outside, Doc. If we walked outside and all these buildings weren't in our way, how far do you think you could see? About 6 miles? Okay, you're right. But what if we looked up? How far is that sun? It's the same thing. Everything in life is relative. And only you put that limit right there on your own mind. Because why? You couldn't conceive. Actually, you can see a whole lot further than that. The only limits that God ever put on you was time. All the other limits have been put on by you or others around you. How far you can think, what you think you can accomplish in this lifetime, is limits that you and only you have put on yourself. So what the mind of man can conceive, see, if you're conceiving that I think I could see myself growing from 10,000 to 20,000 a month and living a comfortable life. If you can conceive that, if you can see yourself doing that, that's conceiving something, isn't it? But maybe you can't really conceive right now with me. Can you really conceive? Can you see yourself there? See yourself in the situation and doing $60,000 a month and having 3 satellite offices and being able to branch out with all the money you're making and break into other type of investments. Maybe you could invest into Arabian horses. Because the only opportunity knocks when you're prepared for it. Opportunity will knock when you're prepared for it. Well, it'll knock anyway, but if you're not prepared for it, you don't look that way. You follow me? But can you conceive that right now? Can you see yourself doing that? Yeah. Well, if you can, and write it down, by God. What the man mind of man can conceive, if you see yourself being able to do it, then it's possible. Then, and this is a big one for AMC, this is something that a lot of you sitting in this room right now, what you love about AMC. What's the next part of that quote? What the mind of man can conceive, all right, so you can conceive it, and believe that you can do it. Now, everybody's a dreamer. You can see, everybody can see themselves out on a 100-foot yacht, you know, up there riding down the intercoastal. Everybody can see, that'd be pretty cool. I can see myself out there. But do you believe you have the potential of doing it? And that's what a lot of people love about AMC, is the fact I've been looking for someone to just believe in me. Who in here is coached by Judy? Does Judy believe in you? Does she have that love that just comes across there, and you just, when you didn't believe in yourself, possibly, Judy was believing in you. So what the mind of man can conceive and believe that you can achieve it. That's done. It's done. You can achieve it. Because when you say you can or you can't, either way, you're right. As soon as it comes out of your mouth, whether you say you can or you can't, either way, you're right. Now, goals, let's break them down. Goals have to be bigger than you. For God or innate, and a great power, whatever it is to you, to get involved. You start by, first of all, you got to set a goal much larger than you. Okay, you've got to set goals, and we'll break them down here in a minute, but you got to set it much bigger than you. You've got to ask yourself, I can see myself doing that, but I don't really know how to do it. And how do you start understanding that? You start surrounding yourself with things that will help you accomplish that, which is seeing is believing. You ever heard of that saying? And saying it. The most powerful thing you can do is that thing I talk about in the basic boot camp, when I talk about that mirror. It is so powerful, Doc. I don't mean to pick on you, you're just sitting right here with me. It is so powerful when I can lean across that sink in the mornings. And if you guys don't do this, you do this over time, I'm telling you, it changes who you are. When I can lean across that sink and say, I'm going to be a positive influence to everybody I come into contact with today. I'm going to be compassionate, yet I'm confident, and I shall not be defeated, and I cannot be intimidated. You know, and you say that type of stuff over and over. Every morning I just lean across, look into my eyes in that mirror. You will not be intimidated. I will not be defeated. I will not be distracted. You just go through that every morning. Now, what happens? Napoleon Hill tells that story in his Laws of Success. He talks about, I don't want to get off on Napoleon Hill talk, but he talks about when he got commissioned by Carnegie Steel. What was his name? Andrew Carnegie. Thank you. Dale Carnegie. When he got commissioned by him, he was told this phenomenal thing that he could not conceive, that he was going to be richer than Andrew Carnegie if he took on this position. And this position was going to be, over the next 20 years, he would not make his money. He would not be commissioned. I don't know why it says he got commissioned by Andrew Carnegie, because he didn't. Andrew Carnegie, you'll have to make your own way, but I'm going to get you in the doors to do these things. And it starts out by Napoleon Hill himself saying, I didn't believe I could do it. And he was living with his brother at the time, and he'd go in the bathroom in the mornings, close the door, and he'd lean across the mirror and he whispered it, because he didn't want his brother to hear how crazy things he was saying. And he did that for a week. And then by the second week, he started thinking, well, maybe I can do it. I don't know. Maybe this Andrew Carnegie knows more than I think he knows. And then by the end of the month, he goes, by God, I can do that. Why not? See, because when you start hearing yourself saying it repetitively over and over and over, you'll accomplish a whole lot more in your life. So that mirror thing I talk about in basic boot camp is powerful. Now, your goals have to be so big that you don't know how you're going to accomplish them. Example, Richest Man in Babylon. Who's ever read that book? Everybody in this room should read The Richest Man in Babylon. They actually got it on CD now. Where they'll just... There you go. Great. Listen to it. It was probably a go-getter project, a gift, more than likely. I don't know. But anyway, these are things that you can pick up anywhere. You can go online and get it. But a lot of truth in that when it comes to business inside that. Oh, gosh. I'll be sitting at a negotiation of some sort, and it'll pop in my head. Who am I talking? It wasn't long ago. I can't remember. I was sitting at a table dealing with somebody, and I was listening to their input and everything, and it just dawned on me. I know who it was. It was an attorney that was trying to set up a business plan for me. And it just hit me. I'm like, man, he's breaking a bunch of rules here, but maybe he knows what he's talking about. And I just kept listening. And then it hit me. I'm like, don't let your brick maker buy your jewels. Hit me just as strong. I was like, well, thank you, Ed Schimmel, but I'm going to head on. That's exactly who it was. Okay? So we've got to make these things so big that we don't know how we're going to do it. But here's the key part of it. You're willing to do it. I was talking to the basic boot camp yesterday just saying, biggest thing about commitment spelled backwards should spell sacrifice. Everybody wants these great big dreams and doing all this, but you really don't want to live the life that it takes. Let me go ahead and tell you, write this out with me. I got a brochure out there you ought to pick up. But you know what? Those of you that are striving for this day, that you're going to be so successful that you can kind of kick back, take it easy, let the money roll in, and have the easy life that everyone talks about. I'll go ahead and give you a hint. It never gets easy. It's actually a whole lot tougher. It takes a whole lot more organization. It takes a whole lot more energy to be successful. Now, I'm not saying I am successful at what I do. I'm not saying I'm any better than anybody else. But let me tell you, it's a whole lot tougher to live my life the way it is now than it was back 10 years ago when I had nothing. Yeah, I had all those dreams and goals and stuff, but life was a whole lot simpler. I didn't have to do all this tax stuff, and I got my famous saying that people got hanging in their offices now, quote from me, if it wasn't for staff and taxes, I'd love my job. I've added one to that, lawyers. If it wasn't for staff, taxes, and lawyers, I'd love my job. It just gets more. And it gets tougher. So those of you that think success is comfortable, get over it. So you're going to have to learn to sacrifice things in your life to gain this stuff. But I'm not saying I got a bad life. I'm having fun. It was kind of, who was it? It's somebody walking by me yesterday saying, talking about their pillow speaker and the goals. And they said, my family thinks I'm crazy. And I said, well, the best thing you can tell them is I'm a healthy, happy, wealthy nut. You can tell them that. You're not very happy, you're not very healthy, and you're not very wealthy. And you're the sane one. So, according to them. Who's they anyway? You know, always that they say. I don't want to get off of that. Okay, so let's start talking about goals. All goals. All goals must have a deadline. If they do not have a deadline, it's just a wish list. You have to put deadlines on yourself. Now, let me explain something to you. A lot of people don't understand what goals are. I've got a cousin, Cindy. Now, she's one of those girls that you tell a joke to her, and she'll just stare at you. And 3 days later, she'll call me on my cell phone and say, "You know, Tommy, that was funny." That's how slow she is. You know, Chris, it's kind of like, you know, she's been hanging in the shed too long. Not the sharpest tool in the shed. Well, that's her. She was riding in the car. Now, this was back when she was probably 17 or 18 years old. She was riding in the car with my dad. And my dad and my Aunt Marilyn are two different, well, I should say, Aunt Marilyn just passed away. So she was two different people completely. So Cindy grew up in a total different type of household. And they were going down the road, and Dad was just talking to her and sharing her that she needs to have goals about this and goals about that. And she finally just interrupted and said, "Uncle Tom, what is a goal? What is this? What is this word you're talking about?" And he had to explain it. So let's talk about them. You should have short-term and long-term goals. You should have personal and professional goals. Now, your short-term should be 30 and 90-day goals. Your long-term are 1 year and 5 years. This is not anything that when we end this class and we got a coffee break in the next 15 minutes, you can write down your goals. This is something that should take you, and it should be very uncomfortable to write your goals down. It should really be something that makes you self-analyze yourself, and it's not fun. If you have fun setting your goals, there's something wrong with it. Because it really should be kind of a gut-wrenching time of, what am I really willing to do? Because most of the time, most people are one talent away from wealth. But it's usually that one area of your life that you really don't want to be analyze yourself, be self-critical to make yourself change. So we want 30 days, 90-day goals. We want 1 year and we want 5-year goals, so short and long term. We want personal goals. And are all our goals materialistic? They certainly shouldn't be. They should be things that change our character, change our capabilities. And by changing your capabilities, that opens up new doors to opportunities. You know, it can be, I just have to give examples. Sometimes I got to get the rust off those gears and get it rolling. It could be you want to learn to be a public speaker, a paid public speaker, preacher. Well, best thing you ought to do in your goals is say, well, in five years, I want to be paid for someone to listen to me talk on such and such type of subject. And it should be a subject that you have a passion and a love about. But what would be this is the main thing I want to talk about goals here. You have to start taking action steps for the goals that set. So we've got 30 and 90, and we've got 1 year and 5 year. But if you set a great big goal, you ought to have action steps you're taking. If you wanted to be that public speaker, then you ought to be joining a Toastmasters club as soon as possible. That's preparing you when the opportunity arises. Okay. So goals must have a deadline. That's thus the reason we have 30-day, 90-day, 1-year, 5-year. Your goals will change if they're not, well, your goals will change, and that is progress. But if your goals don't change, you're not changing. And I assure you, you will continually change and metamorphosize. You'll just continually just... every time, just roll over. Like a snake shedding its skin. You constantly change. You constantly change. And if you're not, you're not taking the right steps. Now, these goals, give me one. Give me a goal that you'd like to have in the next 90 days. Something professional. Okay. He said his two CAs to pass the advanced CA test in the next 90 days. Here's the catch about goals. When you're having that gut-wrenching time to set those goals, then right off to the side of them, you have to write, what am I willing to do to make this goal come to pass? So, take for example yesterday's class, my class yesterday. I want to go from an average of 10 new patient referrals to 25 new patient referrals within the next 90 days. I want to do that. Then what would three things you know that you could do, but it'll take you way out of your comfort zone. You'll have to get organized. It won't be fun to get that organized, especially if you're not organized now. What would be three things that you could do? What were three things you could do? No, I taught the whole class yesterday. I need to teach that class again, don't I? Family health questionnaire. But wasn't it yesterday we were talking about to do those three things, to go from 10 to 25, we would need to organize, and it would not be fun. You'd probably have to go to the trouble of changing to a travel card and calling Aladdin Printing and getting those travel cards ordered and then switching all your files around to get the travel card initiated. Then you'd have to have your CAs doing the post-it notes to remind you to start the 10-visit checklist. That's not fun, is it? But don't set a goal unless you're willing to go to the steps to accomplish the goal. Otherwise, it's a wish. Stop wishing. If wishes were horses, beggars would ride. All right? Now, you said your CAs to pass the CA test. Now, did everybody notice that Dr. Barrows got an award this weekend and he wasn't even here? And they talked about it. He passed May the 96th. Christy called Dr. Barrows and asked him, or said, you know, Dr. Barrows, I honestly don't remember you ever sitting in my class. How did you pass my test? Especially with a 96. No one makes a 96 on my test. How'd you do it? He goes, that's easy. I watched the videos with my CAs. So, there you go. Write your goal down. Write it down. You want your CAs to pass the CA test within the next 90 days. In turn, once a week, for the next 90 days, my CAs and myself are going to stay in at lunch and watch CA videos together. And by the time we watch each CA video three times, we will in turn test each other on how to handle different situations. Write it down. I'm helping you with your goal right now. I assure you, Doc, if you just had the idea, I want you go home Monday and say, you know, in 90 days I want you all to pass the CA test. Okay? You understand that? What's your CA's name? Sandy and Kim. Sandy, Kim, I want you to understand, in 90 days I want you to be able to pass the CA test. Okay? All right. And in 90 days, they take the test again, and they fail it. What are you going to do? I thought I told you all I wanted you all to pass the test. It was your goal. You better take the steps to make sure they pass the test. That's what I mean by that. If you want to increase your practice, $8,000 in collections, don't write that down as a goal until you get specific. That's what I don't see enough pens writing here. You've got to get specific and detailed on what am I going to do to increase my chances of accomplishing that. If it was $8,000 in collections, then there's a lot of different ways we can go there. We can go with increased new patients. We could focus on financials to make sure we get an increase in prepays. What about past due collections? What about accounts receivables? That's not an area we like to deal with. We don't want to deal with that. But we said $8,000 in collections. We didn't say they were coming in a particular area, did we? Oh my gosh, you might actually have to learn your CA position just as well as they're supposed to. That means you could do this. I assure you, if you did what he just did right here, I bet your collections go up in the next 90 days along with it. In fact, report to me in 90 days, tell me. Just call me, leave a voicemail. You're not writing this down. Call Tom in 90 days and report if your collections did not go up a certain percentage in the next 90 days. I bet you can't force your CAs or have your CAs watch that stuff and it not go up. You follow me what I'm saying? You don't set goals without also setting down beside these little subchapter type thing and saying, I'm willing to do this. I'm willing to get up every morning at 6 o'clock and do my success and my routine every day. I'm willing to commit, and I'm going to give you a project at the end of this day, in this talk, to show you how it can happen. So does everyone understand what am I willing or what am I going to do to make this come to pass? Without that, they'll just be goals that hang on your wall, and you'll look at them for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Then it'll be something that every once in a while, as you walk into your office, you glance up there every once in a while. And then all of a sudden, you'll be in July. July will be here, and you'll be going, now I know that I had some intentions on this year, but they haven't gone the way I really want them. Well, they are a little better than they were last year, but this isn't what I really wanted out of this year. I'm telling you, it'll take a lot of effort and energy to accomplish these goals. But as you grow, you know what success does allow? Dr. Hahn and I were talking about this yesterday. You know what success does allow going from 10 to 25 to 45,000? Believe it or not, let's see, who do I have in here? Okay. Dr. Buckner. Let's turn around and look at this guy in the white shirt back there. Dr. Long. Do you know that he did 28,000 last month? Do you know that he works less than you do? Is that hard to believe? You follow me? Efficiency will go right along with this. And as successful gets, I told you, it's more complicated. And he'll learn that in the next 6 months or so. He's going to learn having money rolling in and learn, well, what the heck do I do with it? And he's going to have to learn how to invest. And he's going to have to learn who to listen to. And he's going to learn how to, people are going to start coming at him with different ideas of opportunities and stuff like that. It means he has to learn a whole other field. What do I do with this stuff now that I got it? But he has more time on his hands than you do. You're not stressed out, are you? No, he's not stressed out. And guess what? Whenever you're ready to go up to 45, you'll have to take on an associate. And when you take on that associate, Dr. Stewart is Dr. Wall's associate. Does Dr. Wall have time to take off to go to Key West for a week and a half? Is his practice still operating at $45,000, $50,000 a month while he was down there? Was Dr. Wall sitting out there on that cottage on the beach of Key West making money? God's honest truth, he was, wasn't it? That's what success does for you. It frees up your time where you can still make the same income, but then it frees up your time to go out and do other things. Now, if Dr. Wall wants to go down there and spend a week and a half on the beach, that's one thing. But he could have used that week to go to a super conference with Dan Kennedy and learn how to do direct marketing in a way that no one else can teach you how to do direct marketing. See, time allows you to go play golf or learn how to make more money. Go into different arenas. That's what it does. So, yes, success is fun. Success is something you want. It is more complicated. All right? Now, we've got to be detailed, and then we have, along with that detail, we have to be very specific of what are we willing to change. And you got to think on those areas, Dr. Greller. You have to think, if I want to increase my collections, what are my weak areas? The areas I don't want my coach or I don't want AMC to really point out to me. What are my weak areas? People don't, you ever notice, this will be a good thing in negotiations for you, whether you know it or not. You might know this, you might not. When someone gets defensive of something, you are on their weak area. You're all around their weak area. If they don't respond too much to you and they kind of shrug you off, that's a strong, confident area. So anytime that someone, especially when you're dealing with staff and someone and you're trying to figure out who's did what and who did what and who really did that, it'll be the one that's most defensive about it is the one that's guilty. Okay. Now, another thing about a goal, and this is where the routine comes in, daily routine. This goes along with what are you willing to do. But I want you to write this out. I see a lot of people in life that they do this. They always want to wait for their ship to come in. You know those people that do that. Don't you ever, write this out, don't you ever, ever beg God or anyone else. Stop begging God to send you something. Stop begging God to answer this. Show God through action and persistence. And only I got a very spiritual guy sitting here with me. What kind of prayer gets answered? Persistent, effectual prayer. Persistent prayer. In other words, what does that mean? Every morning you get up and you got something on your heart and you pray it every day. God, I'm not going away. Hey, Dad up there. That's what it is. It's like Davin, my little nephew, going to Myrtle Beach a few years ago and saying he had putt-putt on his mind. And he bugged. I'm glad I was not in that car. But he bugged my dad, my mom, and his brothers and sisters all the way from Chattanooga to Myrtle Beach, which is, let me go ahead and tell you, that's 7.5 hours. Somehow in that 7.5 hours, he came up with 230 different ways to bring up the words putt-putt. Well, thank you. See? He knows the story. From the Georgia-South Carolina state line to Myrtle Beach, he came up with 230 different ways to bring up putt-putt. Now, did anyone in that car want to play putt-putt except one person, other than Davin? No. It was everybody ready to get to the boat and do whatever they're going to do and get to work. And yes. But what did they do when they got to Myrtle Beach, Doc? They played putt-putt. Why? Because someone was persistent. They didn't let up. Only persistent prayer gets answered when God finds out that you're really serious about this. This is something you really want and you really need. Right? So you better get serious is the answer here. You write a goal down. Oh, gosh, let me teach you one great thing here about goals. If you get in the habit of setting goals and you get in the routine of not getting serious and making commitments and making sacrifices and taking action steps like I just showed you how to do, if you get in the habit of doing that, oh, man, what a lifestyle you're going to lead. Not going to be a good one. you are not going to live a very joyful life. In that, you know what you do when you set a goal and then it just kind of lays dormant? Guess what you're doing? You're learning to break the trust of the only person you can trust. You start breaking your own word to yourself. And you do that time after time. It doesn't make sense for me to sit there and say that you're breaking your own trust. But really, that's what starts happening. That's how your mind works. You'll get in the habit of setting a goal, and then you don't do anything about it. And then 2 years from now, when you've set like six sets of goals, then you're going to be that type of guy. You set the goal, and then you'll be driving home after you had a good day at work, and you'll go, you know you're not going to go ahead and do all that. Back of your mind, you'll start thinking, now you really know. We've been down this road before. You learn to break your own word to yourself. So when you do this, I'm giving you this track, or this way, this plan to do this. But be serious about it. Don't take on goals just because I'm telling you to set goals. If you want to live an average life, so be it. If you don't want more, so be it. That's your life. But man, if you set goals, be serious about it before you set them. Now, anybody ever heard me talk about a guy named Joe Charbonneau? All his materials are still tied up in his estate, so we still haven't been able to get them for you. But the day those come available, I highly recommend you getting these. But he talks about, and he's right on too, he breaks society down into percentages. And I mentioned them a few minutes ago. There's three percenters. Write this out with me. There's three percenters. Those tend to be your leaders, your overachievers. Then there's 10 percenters. Those are your managers. Then there's 60 percenters. And 60 percenters are just your really good blue-collar people. And then you got 27 percenters. And those are the lazy, pessimistic, negative, don't ever accomplish anything in their life, and it's always someone else's fault. Now let me tell you some things about these people. Three percenters seek problems before they arise. They're always looking ahead as to what could be a problem in the future that could hinder my growth. 10 percenters are the people that are always solving the problems for the 3 percenters. 60 percenters didn't know there was a problem. 27 percenters are the problem. Let's say this. 3 percenters have 1 to 3 friend people they can hang with. 1 to 3 people that they trust and would call friends. 3 percenters. 10 percenters have a handful of people at the country club that they call friends. 60 percenters hang out with gangs of people. 27 percenters are in gangs. Sure. 3 percenters have 1 to 3 people that they really trust. 10 percenters have a small group of people, a couple of hands full of people at the country club that they like to hang with. 60 percenters tend to hang out in gangs or groups, gangs of people. large groups of people. 27%ers are in gangs.